All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Bob Gould.
And a good day, good afternoon to all of our listeners out there. It's Bob Gould. I'm back behind the mic. That's right. I'm working with my partner today, and it's been a while. Hey, Dale. Dale Thronberry, everyone.
Good afternoon, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio. Yes, it's good to see you, Bob. Good to see you anywhere. I'm glad to see that you're in behind the microphone there.
Yeah.
Good to have you back.
Good to be alive. That's what it's all about. Right, folks? Well, we got a great program today, as usual, but today is always extra special when we have Dr. Rebecca Grant. Mm-hmm. She's going to be giving us everything you want to know about ISIS and Russia and China and North Korea. I can't wait. But before we do that, Dale, we got a couple things going on.
We have a couple of announcements that we'd like to get out there. And next weekend on Sunday, June 11th at 5 p.m., the Ward Church up in Northville, Michigan on 6 Mile Road is having their annual patriotic concert. And this year's theme is The Price of Freedom. A patriotic concert, Sunday, June 11th, 5 p.m., Ward Church is at 40,000-6 Mile Road in Northville, Michigan. It's free. It's put on by Chancel Choir and Orchestra. It's a celebration of the freedom we enjoy in this country and will include many stories about how that freedom was won. Servicemen and veterans will be honored. The concert is free and it's fun for the whole family. Very meaningful.
We were there last year.
We've been there a couple of times, actually, and I think we broadcast it.
We did last year.
Last year or the year before. Anyhow, it's a great concert. They're so talented.
A lot of fun.
And
yeah,
it was fun. So we encourage you to go out there at 5 o'clock next week and listen to that or go to that concert. You can always hear our programs in our archives for what we're going to be talking about next week anyway.
Absolutely. But, that was a cool thing to do. That's Ward Presbyterian Church in Plymouth,
Michigan. I don't know
Michigan.
If it's Presbyterian. I think it's kind of a...
Oh, evangelical? It's mixed, Ward, whatever.
Yes, it's Ward Church up in Northville, Michigan. The second thing is that there's a really cool presentation going on. I know you want to get to that.
Well, I was going to... Okay,
no, you want to jump in with that one? Go ahead.
Good. Thank you. Well,
you're the host.
It's been a while, folks, since we've been together, but that's all right. We're arm wrestling right now, but here we are. Frank, you know, we like to tell veterans, you got the vacation season coming up. What can you do? Well, here's something in Frankenmuth. Oh, historic Frankenmuth, the Michigan Military and Space Heroes Museum. Honor, respect, and remember, it has the nation's largest display Medals of Honor recipients. It's really quite the thing to see. It's in Frankenmuth, Michigan. It's open 7 days a week, and you'll really like going there. You remember? Have you been there yourself?
Yes, I have. Yep. It's cool. Very cool. Plus, you can go into Frankenmuth and have a very good chicken dinner.
And while you're there, that's right. And I think they opened up the brewery too, so you can have a beer.
I'm sure there's some alcohol.
There's a lot of Choymans there. That's absolutely correct. Okay, so that's the Michigan Military and Space Heroes Museum in Frankenmuth, Michigan.
Okay, so the other thing that we wanted to mention today is that many of you are aware of the Yankee Air Museum in our area here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, it's in Belleville, but they put on programs all throughout the month. In addition to all their great displays of aircraft and stories and so forth, they're putting on a presentation this coming Wednesday, the 7th at 7:30. It's the Hiroshima Decision, Truman and the Atomic Bomb, and the Destiny of Mankind. This might be something that we may bring up in our conversation later on.
Oh, yeah.
But Barry Levin, who happens to be a member of the Yankee Air Museum, is putting on the presentation. So we encourage you to get out there at the Yankee Air Museum. You can go to yankeeairmuseum.org to find out more information. It's out at the Willow Run Airport. But if you go out there like I do, I seem to wander around a lot and never get to the right entrance, but it's on D Street.
And they have a B-52 there.
They have a B-52. They have helicopters. They have jets. They have B-29, B-17s. You can get a ride in those things.
An F-4.
Do they?
How anybody. That was with two, right? They had the weapons guy in the back and the pilot in the front.
You'll have to ask Dr. Grant.
Have you seen how big that is?
Some of those things are huge.
How did somebody, I mean, what is that, 30 feet long?
I don't know. I can understand why
that was really
down.
Something to somebody to go off a carrier like that, and that ooh boy, man, that took.
But there's
some,
a lot of great things.
You
to
had
see
to be a
there.
Salty dog to do that.
You did. Of course, the other thing about the Yankee Air Museum is Thunder over Michigan coming up on Labor Day this year. It's always a great show to go to. Make sure you go. So that's it, Bob.
And they have a nice museum, too, that you can...
They do. The other thing I was going to mention is that they are now affiliated with the Smithsonian. They are a Smithsonian affiliate. So,
and I will say one other thing. If you all want to fly a Corsair or a P-51 Mustang or a fighter, they have a simulator there. That's right. You go inside and close yourself in and land. There's different airports you can bring up on. It's really...
All kinds of airplanes. Helicopters.
They have Guam. Oh, Dr. Grant will talk to us. I try to land at Guam? I hit the cliff or something. Okay. And now, next on, we have on the line, and he's been very patient waiting, somebody that I've known for years and years and years, my goodness. And on Veterans Radio, we want to give a big hello to, from one of the national cemeteries, the one in Holly, Michigan, Mr. Jan Bales. Jan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, Bob. Glad to be here.
And thank you very much, folks. He's taken just a moment away from his granddaughter's, is it softball?
Yeah, they won. The game just ended, and I hurriedly picked up the phone so I could talk to you folks.
Well, thank you. And by the way, folks, Jan is a veteran. He's an Army veteran, went to high school with me. We've known each other for a long time. And Jan... recently, there was a plaque that you had a dedication for the high school that we went to, the folks that were fallen from Redford High School. And tell us about how other groups can do that.
Well, the guys who went to the school in the late 50s and 60s got together along with the Redford Museum and sponsored the manufacturing of a plaque that honors the 20 veterans from Redford High School who died in Vietnam. Now, if anybody's interested in doing the same thing we did, tell them to contact me, Facebook or whatever, and I'll get them on the right track.
What's that site that they can get more information?
Well, it's just Jan R. Bales at Hotmail is my Hotmail address, or they can just do it on Facebook with Jan Bales.
Bales, B-A-L-E-S.
L-E-S, you betcha.
Now, and by the way, Jan, we're going to have you back on so you can talk about, I know there's all kinds of things we have, what's going on at the Holly Cemetery, but who's eligible for this? Why don't you give us this in case if someone's got some need, they have somebody in a hospice or whatever, how does someone qualify to be in the National Cemetery?
Well, actually, it's quite easy. All veterans who served in the military are eligible, along with their spouse, for a free burial at the National Cemetery. National cemeteries are part of the VA system. Now, I'll give you a phone number, toll-free, that they can call, or they can come out and visit, and we can line them up.
I think that's great. Fire away.
Okay, toll-free number,
866-348-8603. Correct?
You got too many 866s. There's just one 866.
Just one toll-free number, Bob.
Oh, I got a lot of sixes, all right. Yeah, okay, good. All right, well, and that'll give you all that information. Folks, we're eligible, and that's really cool because you can get a marker or a gravestone, headstone. Isn't that correct?
Well, the veterans have free burial at the cemetery, opening and closing the grave, the plot, perpetual care, and the headstone or the grave marker. So it's a pretty good deal, and you got to remember, these guys put their life on the line, and they've earned this. Well, part of their benefits.
You're talking to a couple of guys that have been doing this for 15 years, talking about the same thing. Jan, I know that you had on here that you work, but whatever it is that you do, what is it that you get the most out of being there?
Well, as you know, Bob, I'm a volunteer out there, and just seeing the old vets and talking about their experiences and stuff is rewarding that. I've been doing this for nearly 10 years and enjoy every minute of it.
And I understand that there can also be a full burial. Is that correct?
Yes. The veterans can request, the families can request a full military honors burial. It's a beautiful cemetery where they have the folding of the flag ceremony, the rifle salute, and the plane of taps. It's really a moving.
Wow. Okay, let's get that number out again. Let's see if I get this right. 866-348-8603.
You betcha.
I got it. Jan, we're got to move along, but we're going to have you back on where you can give us all that historical significance that we have here in Michigan. And it's so nice to see an arm of the government working effectively and efficiently. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. The cemetery is it's a mirror image of Arlington, and the people, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. I encourage all veterans and their families, come out and visit us and pick up some information.
Dale, do you have anything to add?
No, I was out. I haven't been up to Holly. I was out to Battle Creek last year, I think it was, in the fall, and stopped in one also in Pennsylvania. And they're all just beautiful, and they're so powerful emotionally when you see all of those tombstones in a row. It's just all these men and women that have paid that ultimate price.
Oh, well, there's one other thing. Jan, you said something about cremation, that there's a place for cremation remains?
Right. We have... There's a choice for people who are cremated. They can go in the niche in the wall, or they can go in-ground burial. And both, you know, have their markers. And for the veterans, their spouses, we always have the room for the spouse, and the spouse always goes with the veteran. We never separate them. So they're always together.
Wow. Okay, folks. Jan, thank you very much. And, folks, it's 866-348-8603, 866-348-8603. Give them a call, even if it's not at the time. You want to get all this stuff taken care of ahead of time. Jan, I want to thank you very much for taking away from your family today to give a heads-up shout to us veterans. Would you come back?
Yes, I'd be happy to come back, Bob. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, Jan. God bless. Take care.
Bye.
Well, okay, right now, pour yourself a bowl of borscht, grab some brown bread and a shot of vodka, and we're going to be back talking about Russia and the U.S. right after this. Very important. Oh, yeah. Who's going to be with us?
Dr. Rebecca Grant.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. Stay tuned. Oh, yeah, nothing can stop the U.S. Air Force. Man, I want to sign up and take a burst of six. How about you, Dale?
No, thank you. I'm done.
With us right now on Veterans Radio, somebody that we've come to love and endear for all these years that we've been on the air, oh, gosh, at least 7-8 times, is Dr. Rebecca Grant. Dr. Rebecca Grant is a director of the General Billy Mitchell Institute for Air Power Studies of the Air Force Association. And she's also a senior fellow at the Lexington Institute. She earned her PhD degree in international relationships in the School of London. That's right. Of economics, and worked for the RAND Corporation. I wonder, are they still in business? Oh, they are. Okay, Dale's shaking his head. Dr. Graham, in 1995, funded the IRIS. Let's get that right, okay? IRIS, Independent Research, as her own business, and she was doing research for the Air Force, I know, and a lot of the military. In 2012, Dr. Grant spoke out on the hypoxia issues of Lockheed Martin's F-22 Raptor. Ooh, we can talk about that. And Dr. Grant now is currently an active member of the Air Force Association. That's why we played the music. She writes regularly for Air Force Magazine and served from 2008 to 2011 as a founding director of the Mitchell Institute. Whew. Dr. Grant, welcome to Veterans Radio.
I'm thrilled to be back. Hi, Bob, and hi, Dale.
Hi, Dr. Grant. How are you?
Very good, and I loved hearing the strains of Off We Go into the Wild Blue Yonder. Fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you, if it wasn't, you know, I did 2 years instead of four. I couldn't have done the four. Take a burst of four when you're 18. Mm. No, it's hard to do. But anyway, folks, okay, I'm going to start this off. We've got a lot to cover today, and I'm going to start this off because I saw on the weekend the movie Godfather 2, and in the movie, one of the capos was saying to Michael, he was saying, your father did business with Hyman Roth. Your father liked Hyman Roth, but your father never trusted Hyman Roth. So what do we got here with the Russians? Because I didn't see any Russian. I am just lost as to what the heck are we doing business with people that are buzzing our military in Alaska. And when it came to the Cuban missile, it seems like I remember seeing Russian missiles there. I remember the Berlin. There were Russians. What the heck is going to tell us about that?
Russia, Russia, Russia. It's so back in the news. And you probably heard Senator John McCain, I think earlier this week, talking about ISIS, and that's a crisis and all that. But he said, so interesting, he said, Russia is by far the biggest long-term threat. And it's partly because they're really good at propaganda, and they're messing with us and with our allies. But it's also because they really are still a fairly significant military power. So very interesting to see what they're doing. Actually, it's been a very bad spring for Vladimir Putin. I know you'll be sorry to hear that. But there's a lot that really hasn't gone his way. And it goes back to the Kilim strike on Syria. So, you know, Assad, obviously in Syria, is Russia's client state, and he is behaved so badly, right, that we had to launch the TLAM strike after the terrible chemical weapons incident. Mm-hmm. So that's bad for Putin, right? It doesn't give him any more stature. Other things that have gone wrong for him, a very big thing is that Trump and China's Xi Jinping seem to be getting along, and Putin hates that, seeing China and the U.S. talking more, obviously, about North Korea and some other issues in the Pacific. But that's bad for Putin to see that going on. Another thing, NATO has a new member. You may or may not have heard, but Montenegro has become the 29th member of NATO. So Montenegro brings a couple nice ports on the Adriatic. But mostly that just drives Putin bananas because he hates NATO, and he hates NATO expansion. So he's actually come out this week and threatens Sweden. He says if Sweden even thinks about joining NATO, you know, there will be consequences. So Putin is really thrashing around on the international stage. And then, you know, one way he's really taking this out on Western countries is by a huge, huge increase in Russia's propaganda machine.
Well, that means that they have nothing else. To me, whenever I see that, right. I mean, I still want to know why we're doing business with these people. I don't trust them. Never did. Never will. Period.
Well, you're right. They sure don't make it easy for us to trust them. And I think, Bob, you've really hit the nail on the head because they're trying the propaganda because they have really a very weak hand. But to your question, why do we do business with them? You know, why are we carrying on? Well, they have become a part of the global economy. And for Europe, this is even more important because there is quite a lot of energy trade that goes between Russia and Europe. Now, of course, you know, we have sanctions against Russia due to their involvement in Syria and what they've done in Ukraine and all of that. And that's been a big issue, too. There was some hope, I think Putin thought he might get the sanctions eased. But the elections in France have really shut the door on any of that. So Putin has a very weak hand. The Russian population is aging. Oil prices are really down, and that affects his economy
a lot.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
So he does. So he strikes out. I mean, he tries to be the big dude on the international stage in order to impress his folks back home as much as anything.
Well, he plays hockey. Can't be all bad. Dale, what do you think about all that? You're shaking your head.
He plays hockey without a helmet. My question, Dr. Grant, was if we're talking about Russia, probably from an economic standpoint, I'm not that familiar with what their economy is based on. Is it just strictly on energy, or what else do they have to offer the rest of the world?
Well, energy is a big one, right? But we've seen a lot of business go into Russia, and so they're more a part of the market economy, which, of course, they were not at all under their communist system 20 years ago. But they had a time, they were really low in the 1990s, and they had more prosperity. They do a lot of arms manufacture. They do some international arms sales. So they are part of that economy. But really, they have really specialized in setting up, fake internet sites, offices in Western nations, specifically to try to turn the internet narrative more to their advantage and to sow chaos. And they're doing pretty well at that.
Unfortunately, they are. I'm just wondering where they got, where this. Well, it's not that Russia hasn't always been, or at least the former Soviet Union wasn't always a technologically excellent, economy going and the work that they were able to do. But it seems like they have turned that to I don't think they're trying to spread communism anymore. They're just trying to spread Russia.
That's right. They're trying to spread Russia, and they just want to weaken the other big international actors, mainly the U.S., mainly NATO. Putin was an old KGB, GRU. That was his first job, I think, was in the KGB.
Right.
He is from that environment, and he just wants to take the West down. He wants to see Russia rise by cutting others down. But, his options really are limited, and what we see, I know we'll talk about it later, the accelerated anti-ISIS fight, but that's going to limit Putin's ability to mess around in Syria. So he'll have that option closed off after a while. The better we get along with China, that's a dicey relationship, but even a little bit better with China is bad from his perspective. But I think, one thing we really need to keep in mind is how strong this Russian propaganda push really is. The FBI released a report back in December that talked about how the Russians had been targeting 1,500 influential individuals in the U.S. just to try to embarrass them. And that's just the kind of thing we haven't seen since the Cold War, right? And we have to keep in mind that that is their strongest card in their hand right now, is their propaganda card, and they play it all day long.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, real quick, we've got, Nina, 2.5 minutes? All right, 2 minutes. Real quick, I didn't know about this buzzing U.S. forces in Alaska. What happened there?
Well, a classic Russia. So the Air Force hosts an exercise called Northern Edge, and allies come up, and lots of forces go up in Alaska. It's a great big air battle that takes place. Of course, the Russians were not invited to this exercise. And, for instance, the F-35s, Joint Strike Fighter, were up in the exercise, F-22s. And so the Russians decided they would launch some bombers and come along and buzz the airspace, that little tip of international airspace along up in Alaska. They do that pretty routinely, but it was done right in the middle of the Northern Edge exercise. Just another example of Putin trying to insert himself where he is not welcome. Naturally, they were intercepted by the F-22s. Everybody took pictures. All the pilots involved behaved pretty well. But just another example of Putin trying to use his military forces to poke his nose into other people's business.
Well, and being a somewhat intelligent adult. I think you could say that, right? You can see through that. That is so obvious, and I'm just I shake my head as to why we're even. Oh well, let's not even go why we're dealing with these people. Maybe I don't know, maybe. And oh well, one of the things, and you know, you were talking about marketing. There's a Russian store on the corner of my block, an actual Russian store, and they sell Uncle Joe's red wine, $25 a bottle. Can you believe that, Dr. Grant?
I do. You know, the whole, Ukraine and that, that's a wonderful wine-producing region, actually. Have you tried it? Is it any good?
Yes. It was the official wine of the submariners, and it is. It's called Uncle Joe's Red. We'll be right back. Dr. Grant, don't go away. Right? 30 seconds, 29, that's it. Veterans Radio, don't go away. We'll be right back. Ah, yeah, good to see the orchestra's back again. We paid the guys. That could be good. All right, we're back with Dr. Rebecca Grant talking about issues in the world and related to the Air Force. And, folks, we're not getting into any political stuff, okay? This is all commentary. That's all it is. Well, right now, North Korea, missile development, ground-based interceptor. What happened to all the money we've been spending on all these missiles? I see this takes down that, and you got Nike, and you got Tomahawk, you got Hatchet, you got, I mean, whatever, you got all these missiles. And what do we have, a new one, ground-based interceptor? And is that the Air Force or the Navy? Tell us about that.
Right, the ground-based interceptor up in Alaska. It's not new, but it hasn't been in the press that much. However, it was in the press this week because, you know, our missile defense nerds, I say that lovingly, scored a really big victory this week. They did a test launch out over the Pacific. So we launch, a target missile and then launch an interceptor. And this was probably their best shot ever. This is a system, Bob and Dale, that's deployed. There are missile silos up in Alaska at Fort Greely, and they have also deployed missile silos at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California on the coast. Mm-hmm. It's a system that was designed specifically to intercept what they call rogue missiles. So perhaps North Korea, Iran, fill in the blank, launching a few ballistic missiles. Now, neither country is capable of that yet, but we fear they are close. And so many years ago, we started building this system. It's called the Ground-Based Interceptor. Test this week was really good. They had a new kill vehicle on the front end, kind of a block upgrade, and it performed perfectly. In the past, this missile system had a few tests that didn't go quite as we would have liked. It's been much better lately, but the last test was in 2014. It was successful, and now this test of the upgraded version was successful. What it means, honestly, is, you know, you should feel a little safer because of the success of this GBI test this week.
Is this Air Force again or Navy that's producing? Who's developing the ground? Who developed the ground-based interceptor?
So, you know, a while ago, do you remember Star Wars and SDI?
Right, that's what I was thinking, right.
Right, that organization has changed its name a bunch of times, but it's now called the Missile Defense Agency, and they are based currently out of Huntsville, Alabama. They're the ones that do the development. And then they also develop the various pieces, so whether we talk about the elements that are out with the Navy on the ships or the Terminal High Altitude Air Defenses, THAAD, which we have on Guam and we're putting into South Korea, et cetera. So it's all developed by this large missile defense agency, but they've done pretty well. And we anticipated that we might see North Korea act up the way it has. And so these defenses really are there to start to give us some protection in the United States against rogue missile threats.
What about Japan?
Japan, absolutely. You know, so Japan has a really good sea-based defense system as well.
Yeah.
And they, we look at in missile defense, it's all about layers, right? So you want to be able to defend in multiple layers. And particularly in around the Sea of Japan and in the neighborhood of North Korea, one of the most effective systems there are the Aegis radar-based systems that come off the Navy ships, both our U.S. Navy ships and Japan's Self-Defense Force Navy. They have really good sea-based intercept capability on the missiles. And boy, do we need it, because look at North Korea. My goodness.
Well, yes, but and here's my take on it, if anybody's interested, that I believe that Kim Jong-un, am I saying that right, Kim Jong-un is looking to be a global player and in the economics, just like made in Formosa, you know, the
Taiwan,
yeah, Taiwan stuff we get, and that's what I think it really is getting down to, and unless the guy is totally insane, and I guess that part is possibility, but to me he's looking to leverage himself to start becoming another South Korea, and I think if he were to ever launch any kind of missile or any kind of weaponry on South Korea, that would be his choice more than I think Japan or even something on the U.S. Would you comment on that?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Boy, he's a mystery trying to figure him out. He's been in power there since 2011. And the worst thing about it is he has really accelerated the missile tests. They've done nearly, I think, about 55 missile shots since Kim Jong-un took power. They've done 9 this year alone, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about those. But, you know, the question about South Korea is very interesting, because the South Koreans and the North Koreans do occasionally exchange shots, but they tend to keep it very, very limited and very low-key. So, you know, you'll see an occasional exchange of artillery shells, whatnot. So we really don't know, you know, obviously we have formidable forces in South Korea. The South Korean, you know, Republic of Korea forces are very strong, ground forces and air forces. We have 28,000 Americans there, Army and Air Force together. Of course, Navy and Marines in the region, too. So it's a formidable force. But then we see the missile testing. So what's he trying to do? He's trying to preserve his own power internally, and he's trying to demonstrate that he's a big player on the world stage. It's just crazy. The thing is, though, it's really going over into a territory that's very dangerous, as he's begun to test more intermediate-range missiles. He's done a satellite launch. Now, not all these tests have gone well. In fact, most of them don't go very well. Mm-hmm. But simply the volume of testing tells us that he is really desperate to establish this capability. And you got to ask yourself, where's China in all of this? You know, right. What do we think about China?
Well, I would like, and I had a discussion with a friend of mine this past week, and he was not in agreement with me about the, as you pointed out, the last time we got together in the beginning of the year was that there's an refugee, that's what we want to say, problem, that if North Korea were to be overthrown, we're talking about the government, folks, that there would be mass migration across the borders. Nothing would be able to stop them. These people are starving. They have no food. They have no medical care. They have no education. Is that true? Tell us about that.
Right. That refugee scenario is really a scary one. When we look at military planning, there's missile defense, there's defending the border, and there's also contingency planning for what if North Korea just collapses. And then what about China? North Korea was set up to be China's buffer state. You know, all those years ago, 1953, the war, Eisenhower ends the war, and here we are. But North Korea is now becoming more of a liability, even for China. Now, we know that China has a lot of control over North Korea. That's the major trading partner. That's how they get their internet. You know, a lot of this runs right through China. So what we saw this spring is China acting like they're willing to talk a little bit more about putting the pressure on North Korea to cool it on the missile tests, because North Korea is becoming more of a problem for China than a benefit. So that's really where the question is, will the international community and China be able to work together to suppress Kim Jong-un? I was more optimistic about this, I think, back in April. We saw some good dialogue between Washington and Beijing. Communications are open, which is good. And with the international community now has said, we want to find a peaceful solution on the peninsula, but it's got to include defanging North Korea. The tests have got to stop. The nuke stuff has got to stop as well. So can they really do that? And now we've seen more missile shots, including some tests of some mobile missiles, which are terribly hard to track. So, you know, kind of we have to see if China's willing to step up again and put that pressure on North Korea and cool it off.
Well, somebody asked me, well, you know, how did North Korea get all this technology? And I know who they got it from. Okay, we don't have to where the footprints are on that one. Now they've got to put the genie back in the bottle, the Chinese. But I will say this, I feel that the Chinese have always been our friend, basically our friend. And I didn't see any Chinese missiles down there in Cuba, and, et cetera, et cetera. So and as far as doing business, why are we not, you know, I'm saying that rhetorically, why are we not doing business with China and more, and the heck with the Russians? And I guess I'm looking for what's standing in our, is it xenophobia, or are we just ignorant of the fact that these are people over the years that have stood by us? Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, and I think China has said now, you're right, they want to ascend and to be the great power that really they are economically. And they can't fully make that transition to be a leader in the international community as long as they have this ridiculous state of North Korea launching missiles every 2 weeks in multiple directions.
Good.
So China has to resolve this. And North Korea is just the most awful client state ever. And China cannot continue where it wants to go until they get North Korea back in the box. And I think the signs are hopeful that there's been good dialogue. You know, the Secretary Mattis at the Pentagon keeps saying, yes, we're still talking with China. We're not going to tell you what we're saying, but we're still talking with China about North Korea. And I think that is hopeful. We have some other disputes with China about territory in the South China Sea, and there are many, many issues in our military balance with China, but I think our point of agreement with them is that North Korea has to stand down from the nuclear and missile tests.
Is it possible that the Chinese could curtail a lot of their economic support of North Korea with the effect of that Kim Jong-un will be overthrown? Is that a possible scenario that China may be looking at?
Definitely the economic, that's their lever, one of them. And I think you point out, Bob, that's really the question. If they use that economic leverage, what are they trying to achieve? And it's a new dilemma for China. They haven't had to manage a situation like this. Do they want to really push him over the edge? Do they want to just keep him in power, but with not as much military activity? I bet the Chinese are probably debating that themselves internally to see what's the best thing they can do. And I think they're going to need some time to try to figure out how to work this problem. They are the ones who have to work it, no question.
Well, folks, you know, we used to have something called the UN that was supposed to step in and stop aggressive nations like North Korea and that, but I don't think that's possible, because with now the missiles and being what they are and mobility, that's just not something I think you can count on anymore. So, Dale, do you have anything to comment on?
Well, I was just wondering why you were discussing the possible turnover of power in North Korea, even though, you know, nothing indicates that at all. It's the what are you going to replace it with? I mean, you've got an authoritarian government that's been in power for, what, 60, 70 years, somewhere along those lines. How do you replace it when you have a population that is just, they don't know anything different?
Exactly, Dale. That's what do you replace it with? And that's why I think most of our diplomats have been really careful not to put regime change out there as a number one policy goal. And, you know, I think the ones who probably really have the insights here would be our allies and friends in South Korea. They probably know more about what the possibilities are. But again, that's right. And so we have not seen either the Trump administration or any of our allies call for regime change, but only call for a peaceful denuclearization. And that really does still leave the ball in China's court to try to see, again, how far they want to push their economic leverage with that nasty, nasty client state.
Can I go back, take one step back, and is Russia involved at all in the Korea? Because if we looked at you know, the Korean War, we had the, you know, the Red Chinese on one side, and, you know, we're on the other side. In Vietnam, we had the Red Chinese. We had the Russians involved there.
Yeah, Chinese.
At the same, everything, all over the place.
Red Chinese.
Well, you had Taiwan then at that time, too. But,
oh, okay.
You know, because they were on our side. And the question is, do you see Putin, I guess, again, trying to get involved in that negotiation?
Yes, he wants to be in everything. And
I know.
And Xi Jinping have talked about it. And of course, that is also Russia's neighborhood. And one of the missile tests landed really close to their territory.
Oh.
Interestingly, they have been largely on board with trying to get North Korea back in the box as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Russia wants to be in on that one as well. I mean, understandably. But he wants to be in everything. So he's in there too.
Dr. Grant, take a sip of tea or coffee or whatever it is and a drink of water. We've just got a short break, and then we'll be back with the last segment. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We have Dr. Rebecca Grant with us. And Dale Thornberry's with me, Nina in the booth, and Derek and everybody will be right back. Oh, the guy's got another hit in there. Okay, you're right. Yeah, well, you know, they're still working. We're back with Dr. Rebecca Grant talking about issues with our military, especially the Air Force, and its effect around the world. And now the one thing I've been waiting for so much, accelerating anti-ISIS fight, the new tactics. And what are they? And, well, you mentioned in here post-combat aftermath. Tell us about all that, please.
Yes, there is a lot going on with the anti-ISIS fight, but it's been done, well, a little bit quietly. So, you know, you may have missed it. It's kind of buried in the back pages of the newspaper. But let me give you a quick rundown. There was an excellent briefing done at the Pentagon in mid-May by Secretary Mattis and General Dunford, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and another State Department advisor, and they were all in town in Washington, and they all came and gave a briefing. Very, very interesting. So first of all, they report that things are going pretty well. Now, we know NATO has agreed to formally enter the anti-ISIS fight. Nearly all the NATO partners were already members of the coalition, but now NATO is official. And this is good because it means, for example, that they can bring down the NATO AWACS, the radar surveillance plane. Mm-hmm. It just makes it easier for these countries to support the fight. Here's the next very big change, and you gentlemen will appreciate this. That is that our advisors on the ground have been cleared to go a little bit closer to the fight. And Dunford mm-hmm. put it very plainly. He said, they can go as far as the last cover and conceal position. So our American advisors there are not actually closing with the enemy. Our partners are doing that, the Iraqis, Syrian Democratic Forces, the Kurds. But now the advisors can go right up to the last hide site, essentially. Next big change, they have decided to encircle everything. So they're working, clearing Mosul. They are encircling the Syrian town of Raqqa, which is a big ISIS hub, and they are taking the time to encircle these forces so that the ISIS fighters trapped there cannot get out. So really, really big changes with, of course, continued application of coalition air power making all this possible.
That sounds great. It actually sounds like a siege from the Middle Ages. You know, they're surrounding the castle and just kind of, you know, creeping up on them closer and closer as they go along.
Yeah.
I guess that's the only way they can do it, because they can't allow ISIS to continue moving from city to city to get away from, you know, the coalition forces.
Who's funding ISIS?
ISIS is self-funding to a great degree. That's why they went in and took over the Iraqi northern oil fields in 2014. They do a lot of, blackmail and extortion and oil market funding. They get some donations to their horrible cause, but they do tend to go in and dominate the trade in the towns that they're in. So that's how they get their money. They've cut off a lot of the flow of cash They've cut off some of the oil trade that ISIS engages in. They've cut down the flow of foreign fighters. But, Dale, you were right to say it sounds like a medieval siege. There are a couple very important limiting factors on this campaign, and I think it's going to take about another year to clear it up. Mm-hmm. The biggest one is what they call the partner forces. There is a very elite Iraqi unit that is leading the charge around Mosul. The Syrian Democratic Forces are similarly elite. There are some elite Kurdish forces, but on the whole, they're small. So they can only proceed as quickly as these units can maneuver and, frankly, in some cases, absorb the casualties. They
right.
don't dare go so fast that they attrit these partner forces. So they really have to take their time. And Mattis has said he will not put a timeline on this. It's remarkable. No timelines. He's not going to say it will be done by summer or Christmas or anything like that. No timelines.
Now, folks, you just heard that. They're selling oil. I'm not even going to ask who they're selling oil to. I don't really care about all that, okay? But somebody has to be buying it. And where are they putting their money? Is there a Bank of America? I mean, what do they got there? They got something going on. The money's got to come in somewhere. Somebody's got to be involved in doing all this. And that's what really irritates. How about you, Dale? Isn't that it? Geez, I mean, why are we not punishing these people that are doing business with these folks,
You're asking the wrong person on that, for sure. But no,
Well, that's the political part. We can't ask Dr. Grant that. But you can't,
you know, if people are selling oil, as you pointed out, somebody's buying it, and then they're passing it along. It may be going into our cars right now. We don't know. And I think that that's the thing that's so upsetting, is that it just seems to be this constant circle of money going around the globe and coming back and still supporting them. And you would think that we could just shut it down, but I'm guessing that that's probably not possible.
Well, we're not
going to solve it from a
political
standpoint.
We're not going to solve this today, folks. And so we're going to kind of leave this whole ISIS thing behind us right now. And that's fine, because I think we've covered everything on that. And by the way, if you all have a comment, you can write us at veteransradio.net, right? Bob or Dale.
At
Veterans Radio.
Facebook, the whole nine yards. Everything is out there if you want to get in touch with us.
We have a dirigible. I mean, we got everything going. Okay, well, here it is now. We're down to the wire and my favorite subject, funding. What's going to happen to my favorite lovely airplane that I love and look at and cherish, and I feel we're so fortunate. The B-52 bomber here. We had 25 more years of it lined up, and then here comes another president and another budget, and he starts putting all kinds of aircraft carriers, and I didn't see anything in there for the Air Force. Oh, boy, what's going on here?
Well, there are some things in there for the Air Force. You know, we do have a new bomber in production. It's a great big secret. Northrop Grumman is building the B-21 Raider. It's named the Raider in homage to Jimmy Doolittle and the raid conducted against Japan in 1942. So that's why it's called the Raider. But we won't see that out on the runway for quite some time. Meanwhile, we have our B-2s and B-52s and B-1s. You know, the B-1s are in the ISIS fight, of course.
Yes.
So the B-52s stay. We're also, the new budgets that are out continue funding for the F-35, which is the Air Force's primary replacement fighter. It'll eventually replace F-16s and some of the A-10s and some other things. The Navy is buying it too, as is the Marine Corps and many of our allies, including Israel and a bunch of European partners, Canada, so on and so forth. So we do see some things there for the Air Force. I think what all the services really want is to improve their readiness, take some of the stress off their personnel. We're talking now, of course, about years of global operations. That's really taken a toll on the service members, on the equipment, on the families as well. So we're seeing the services try to rebuild in their budgets and get ready for a stronger deterrent in Europe, going back to
our friend
we just talked about with Russia, right? We have to still deter in Europe and in the Pacific.
Well, the Air Force owes its existence to the strategic bombing mission. We covered part of that. But I still, and I think I emailed you on this, that I mean, here you have a B-2 that leaves, where do they, no, some of that, some North Dakota, somewhere out there. Anyway, and they got to do like 10 refueling stops to make a mission, and yet you can have an aircraft carrier so close with planes, bombing planes, whatever, Lord. And how is the mission going to stay with strategic bombing, number one, and air power remains the core of our national security? So I'd like you to comment on both of those, please.
Yes, air power really is the core, and you see it in so many missions. Let me go back for a moment to operations over Iraq and Syria. Our airmen have dropped, so far this year, weapons released, 14,192 as of the end of April. Some of that is from the coalition partners, but the bulk of it is from U.S. forces, and the majority of that from the U.S. Air Force. You talk about, Bob, about carriers and bombers. Well, we really rely on both out in the Pacific. Our bombers forward deploy to Guam on a regular basis. They rotate through on the continuous bomber presence, and they do flights in every direction from Guam, down to Australia, up north, out further west, and they show presence. They've done flights across South Korea to the bombing ranges in South Korea to send that message to the north. So we really do rely on the bombers for their special missions, their ability to bring that payload and to go anywhere on the globe in relatively short order. So the B-2's home based, of course, out of Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, which I visited. Fabulous place, the greatest people, superb crews. Now we rely on the carriers as well. There was a lot of news when the USS Vinson, Carl Vinson, was extended for a month. These guys had been out since late 2016. They got a month added to their tour. They had to stay at sea a month longer because of the North Korea crisis. That came up in April, so good job there. Now the USS Ronald Reagan has gone down to kind of take over in that area. But our commanders out in the Pacific want the carriers, they want the bombers, they want the fighters. They need all that air power in order to make deterrence possible.
Well, it sounds like the triad is solid. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the Navy is building a replacement nuclear submarine. They're going to call it the Columbia class. It's one of their top priorities, so we'll keep our submarine-launched ballistic missile leg of the triad. We have the B-52s and B-2s still in that nuclear deterrence role. B-21 will come along later on and fill in there. And we retain the third leg of the triad, which is the Minuteman, in the silos up in North Dakota and other places. So very, very solid. And with Russia on the move and North Korea doing who knows what, I think we feel that the triad and its flexibility are more important than ever. We need to really keep that triad solid and maintain our advantage also in space in order to be able to use our military power to back up our diplomacy.
You've started another career. You're on television. Tell us about that.
Now and then, right, to comment and really to deliver military facts on what's going on with North Korea, talk about high-altitude air defense, fill in the military facts about ISIS, et cetera. I think there's a real appetite right now as we see our forces engaged in so many places. Everything in the international order is on the table, whether it's from the climate agreements down to what we do about North Korea. A lot of change going on. And so I've had a good time talking on MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. Not political, just talking about what role our military forces play and the big issues in national security. A lot of fun.
And how often are you on?
You know, about once a week these days, and sometimes more depending on what's going on in the international system.
How much lead time do they give you?
Yeah, no, that varies a lot. Sometimes it's a couple days, sometimes it's a couple hours.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Depending on what's going on. But I think it's really great to get to talk. I love talking with you all about the national security issues, and I like to do that. That's my thing.
If you can, email us that stuff so we can put it out on there, even if it's a couple hours. See if you can think about that. Well, here's the band got up. Oh, man, they're stretching. They're playing. Dr. Rebecca Grant, we love you here, all of our listeners. And, boy, oh, you're the ones with Rebecca Grant. Man, she's really great. Okay, well, then you want to hear more? You want to come to Veterans Radio. Dr. Grant, thank you very much. Okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
And good luck to your new career, Dale.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Dr. Grant. I can't imagine anybody who knows more about what's going on than you do.
Oh man. I feel...
My pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yes, I feel so enlightened. 30 seconds. Zingerman's will be given. Check your mailbox, okay? Right. All right. We'll be back next week. Dale,
we will be back next week. We're going to be talking about the pit burners. And for those of you that have been in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know what those are.
Ooh.
And so tune in next week.
Until that time, you are dismissed.